Hey, it's Austin James. Yes, I'm living with diabetes, but it doesn't have to define me. Thanks to the FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor, I get real-time glucose readings throughout the day. The FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor is small and easy to wear, giving me the freedom to focus on my life as a parent and a musician. Now this is progress. You can get a free sensor at freestylelibre.us.
Offer available for people who qualify. Visit myfreestyle.us to see all terms and conditions. Certain exclusions apply. Data on file, Abbott Diabetes Care, or prescription only. Safety info found at freestylelibre.us.
And now, a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense. In a moment, Act One of Brother John, starring William Redfield, and written especially for Suspense by Elspeth Eric.
It was so simple, it was ridiculous. I was lying there in the veterans hospital with a brain embolism. Stroke, they call it, for short. You think that only happens to old people? Both of us in that room were under 30. You see, you get a stroke on the left side of your brain. It paralyzes the right side of your body. And it makes you so you can't talk. I mean, you got all the words in your head and you understand what everybody says, but you can't talk. So I just laid there and listened to Brother John talking to the army doctor.
He's your brother?
Yes, 20 years younger. I've taken care of him since he was a kid.
Well, we'll hope for spontaneous recovery.
What's that?
The damage to the brain clears up by itself. Speech returns and the paralysis disappears.
Ah. Well, what do I do now?
Well, can you remember what books he read as a child? Little poems or songs. Hey, diddle, diddle, Humpty Dumpty. Often these things come back first.
Charlie was born in France. Our parents both died there when Charlie was 10. By that time, I was in okay shape financially, and they sent him back to me. But he only spoke French. I remember he used to sing that Frère Jacques thing.
Yes, singing often helps. The rhythm carries them along.
I hardly know any French.
Well, now, you do your best. This may all clear up sooner than you think. Huh? The man on the other side of the screen has the same trouble. He seems to be coming along.
Well, thank you, Doctor.
Anything else you want to know, ask for me at the desk.
Thanks. Hey there, chum. You look fine. Now listen. I'm going to tell you what we're going to do. You know the apartment I have over the garage at the Tremaines? Well, you're going to come there. It's big enough. Wait till you see it. It's great. Yeah. What's the matter? You think they'll mind? They won't mind. They're very nice people. And of course, they're really not in any position to mind anything. Are they, huh? No. But when I took that prison rap for Jerry Tremaine, he promised he'd look after me for the rest of my life. And somebody asks you, what does your brother do? You can say, he's butler for the Gerald Tremaines. Not much, I grant you that, but it's better than saying he's a bum, right? Yeah, he's doing very well, incidentally, old Jerry. All strictly on the up and up ever since that one little mistake that I did time for. But I'm a nice fella. I've stuck to our original agreement, $200 a week for life. And of course, I get my board and room. So most of it I've got put away for you. And if you ever need a little extra, well, truth is, Mrs. Tremaine is what you might say crazy about me. I could always put the bite on her for a little extra if you needed it. Listen, I brought you some champagne. Want me to open it now, huh? Oh, okay, later. With your buddy here, huh? Doctor says you both got this cerebral thing. Okay if I introduce myself? My name's McGee. Yeah, I'm Charlie's brother, John. I brought some champagne. You and Charlie can have it together, okay? You both look great, you know. Just great. Well, good luck. Enjoy the champagne. Hey, looks like a nice fella. You want to say something, Charlie? Go ahead, try, huh? Go ahead. Frère Jacques, Frère Jacques, dormez-vous? Dormez-vous.
I had to laugh. Big Brother John standing there trying to sing in French.
Well, all right, so he didn't know French. But he had brains. He does a little stretch in prison for a guy, then when he gets out, he moves in with the guy, gets $200 a week, and takes over the wife besides. Well, anyway, a few days later, I had a spontaneous recovery. Blood clot was absorbed, speech came back, paralysis is gone, I'm out of the army. I'm walking around. But you see, I'd never met these Tremaines, and I'm very curious to find out what they're like. So, Mrs. Tremaine comes to the door. Not a bad-looking woman for her age. She lets me in and introduces me to her husband.
This is my husband, Mr. Tremaine. Gerald, this is John's brother, Charlie.
Charlie? Good Lord. Sit down. Sit down, Charlie.
Well, I should have called John, I guess, but I wanted to surprise him.
Gerald, you tell him. I just can't.
Charlie, we were just going to call you at the hospital.
Huh?
Yeah, the truth is, well, your brother has been shot, Charlie, killed.
John? John was shot?
It just happened about an hour ago.
Well, who'd want to do a thing like that?
We don't know who did it.
The police don't know.
Gerald, you ought to let them know that Charlie's here.
All right, I will. I'll be right with you.
He was such a wonderful brother to me.
I know. He talked a lot about you.
I mean, he did everything for me.
You were planning to stay here with him, weren't you? He said so.
Yeah, till I get a job or something. Now I don't know what to do.
Well, why don't you just stay on here anyway for the time being?
Oh, I don't know if I could.
John's apartment's over the garage, you know. Why don't you just move in?
Well, Mrs. Tremaine, I'd kind of like that. Yeah, I'd like to poke around there, sort of, and see if I can't figure out who could have wanted to kill my brother John. It was so simple. It was ridiculous. I could move right in, and I did. Ah, they were nice, really. She was what you'd call faded, I guess, but not too faded. I could see how John could have gone for her a little bit. Next morning, I asked if I could help her with breakfast. You know, John told me a lot about you, Mrs. Tremaine.
He did?
Yeah. He liked you a lot.
Well, that's very nice to hear.
I can see why. You're very attractive.
Well, now...
I mean, John certainly thought you were. And so do I.
That's a nice compliment from a young man.
Well, you're not much older than I am.
Well, I'm certainly not younger.
Lots of men my age go for older women.
I really wouldn't know about that.
Oh, come on now, Mrs. Tremaine. You must have had lots of guys going for you.
Really, Charlie, I don't think this is the way for us to talk.
I knew I had her. When they say they shouldn't talk this way, they're starting to weaken. They talk that way all the time they're saying they shouldn't, and pretty soon they're ready for action. Anyway, I could see she was getting uncomfortable, and that was exactly what I wanted. Her husband came downstairs right then, and I took him some coffee in the living room.
John was with us a long time, you know, Charlie.
Yeah, I know.
A terrible shock. Awful. You talked to the police?
Mm-hmm. Last night. They don't seem to know much.
Uh-huh. Well, they need time, I guess.
Oh, sure.
Look, Charlie, you stay on here just as long as you like.
No, Mr. Tremaine. I'll be moving on pretty soon, I guess. I mean, John said he had some money saved up for me.
Oh?
Yeah. Quite a lot.
Good.
I don't know how he did it. Almost $40,000.
That much, huh?
Yeah.
Well, he must have made good investments.
No, he just had savings. Yeah. In 4 different banks.
Oh, is that so?
Yeah. Every week he made a deposit, see? A big one.
You don't say.
Mm. Ever since the first week, he came to work for you.
Well, now, what do you know about that?
So, well, they had him, too, and I knew it. Now, both of them were uncomfortable. Ah, but they were nice people, really. I could almost have gotten to like him. Yeah. Anyway, I helped Mrs. Tremaine put the breakfast on the table. They even asked me to eat with them, but I said no, I was going out. Only I didn't go out. I stayed in the kitchen because I wanted to hear what they had to say to each other.
Connie, how long is he going to stay?
Charlie?
Yeah, Charlie.
I don't know.
Nice fellow.
Very nice.
Not like John, though.
No, not really.
Mm-mm. Doesn't even look like him.
He's a lot younger, of course.
Yes.
I'll miss John.
We'll get somebody else.
Not like John, though.
No, not like John.
I was sorry I wasn't like John. I really was. I'd have liked to stay on with these people for a while. I was even a pretty good butler, if you can imagine that. I helped Mrs. Tremaine get lunch.
I'm terribly awkward in the kitchen, I'm afraid.
Oh, well, let me do that.
John always did everything.
Uh-huh. He was a good man.
Yes, he was.
Yeah, you know, I'm sorry I didn't get to see more of him.
Well, we used to ask him to have you here for a visit, but he never would.
I know. I wonder why he wouldn't. I wonder if it was a woman.
Oh, no, it wasn't a woman. I'd have known if the...
Oh? You would?
Well, I mean, if that was why he wouldn't have you here, I'd have known if he was seeing some woman here.
No, I meant if it was some woman who killed him. You should have seen her face. All of a sudden, she looked like somebody had hit her. Then Mr. Tremaine came home for lunch. I made him a drink first in the living room.
Join me, Charlie?
Oh, well, thank you, Mr. Tremaine.
I don't usually indulge in the middle of the day.
No, of course not. $38,000.
How's that?
Oh, that's what my brother had. In four different banks.
Oh, well, that makes you a rich man, doesn't it?
Well, not quite. I just can't help wondering, that's all.
Wondering what, Charlie?
Oh, where he got all that money. Who gave it to him all those years.
Well, I wouldn't know if anybody gave it to him.
Well, you see, if somebody was paying him, that could be the man who killed him. So he could stop paying it.
Oh, I see what you mean.
She came in right then and told him lunch was ready, and they both went into the dining room looking absolutely sick. As a parting shot, I said that I was going down to the police station. I thought that should start a little something, you know? I went out to the kitchen, and I opened and shut the door like I was leaving, but I sat down to listen.
That's the third time he's talked to the police.
That's natural, isn't it?
Yes, I guess so.
I must say, he doesn't seem to be mourning for his brother very much.
No, they were supposed to be very close, weren't they?
I guess men just don't show their feelings. In fact, I'm sure they don't.
Meaning me?
Toward each other. Some men don't even show their feelings toward their wives.
Me again?
If you have any feelings toward your
wife... Oh, Connie, don't start that again.
Sorry.
I'm sorry. That Charlie is making us both nervous.
I'm not nervous. Are you nervous?
No, not nervous, exactly.
Yes, you are.
Look, why don't we get rid of him?
Get rid of whom?
But Charlie.
But we just asked him to stay.
You asked him of me.
Well, if you want him to leave...
I didn't say I wanted...
Tell him so.
Well, I'll give him some money till John's estate is settled.
That'd be nice.
Well, so tell him.
Me? You tell him.
Why should I tell him? You tell him.
Why me?
And so it went. You tell him. No, you tell him. I wanted to laugh. I got out of the kitchen very quietly, and I did go down to the police station. They didn't know anything. They hadn't found the gun, and they couldn't figure out who'd had a motive. So, about 5:30, I went back to the house. Mrs. Tremaine was setting the table for dinner.
Did you see the police, Charlie?
Yeah. I was there all afternoon.
Really? All afternoon?
Mm-hmm. They wanted me to tell them everything I knew about John.
Really?
Yeah. I didn't know a lot. He never said too much about himself.
No. No, he was sort of a quiet man.
A few things, I told him.
Oh, like what?
Well, like I gathered he was very happy here. I mean, you took good care of him. I gathered that.
Well, we tried.
He was really happy here. Yeah, he really was happy. He used to say he never wanted to leave here.
Did he?
Yeah. I guess he had about everything he wanted. Right here in this house.
Everything?
I mean, jobs like that are sure hard to find. That have everything.
I suppose they are.
Her hand started to shake, and pretty soon she gave up trying to set the table and went out to the living room to join Mr. Tremaine. I told her that I was going to go up and wash up for dinner, but instead I went out in the hall. She closed the door to the living room, and standing on the other side, I could hear everything that went on.
Gerald, I must tell you something.
What, dear?
Gerald, we've got to get rid of that man.
I told you that at lunch.
He knows something.
What do you mean, something?
Gerald, I never meant to tell you this. It isn't anything much, really, only now it might make the police think I killed John.
You?
Oh, I'm so ashamed of myself. Carrying on with a servant.
What?
Poor little lonely housewife, taking up with the first man who was nice.
Connie, what are you talking about?
That's the way I thought of myself, Gerald. It was all self-pity, all of it. I was alone all day, and John was here.
Connie,
that's the way it was.
You and John?
Yes.
That's hard to believe.
Oh, Gerald, I'm not trying to excuse myself. I'm not. It's just that now John's dead, and that awful Charlie thinks some woman killed him, and I think he thinks I'm the woman.
No, he doesn't.
He's been hinting around.
He thinks some man did it. Some man who was paying John a lot of money, extortion money.
Who?
Me.
You?
Yes. He doesn't come right out and say it, but he knows someone's been paying the money, and I think he suspects me. And he's right.
What do you mean?
I paid John for 15 years, ever since he got out of jail. We were both guilty, but he took the rap.
Guilty of what?
Embezzlement.
Embezzlement?
Yes. We took $70,000 from the firm before we got caught. As I said, I went free and John went up the river. I paid him $200 a week, 52 weeks a year. He'd saved up almost $40,000 when he was killed.
But you didn't kill him.
Is that a question?
I know you didn't do it.
You know I didn't?
Of course. You think I did?
No, of course not.
You don't think maybe he got tired of me or I got jealous or hysterical or something and shot
no,
him?
No, of course I don't.
I did get jealous sometimes and hysterical.
But you didn't kill him.
No, I didn't.
Neither did I.
I know.
Well, that wasn't the way I'd thought it would go, frankly. In the first place, I never thought they'd spill everything to each other. And in the second place, I thought if they did spill everything, they'd each jump at the chance to pin it on the other. Yeah, they must have loved each other or something. Oh, something like that. Anyway, I decided to walk in and settle the whole thing right then and there. Mr. Tremaine.
Yes, Charlie.
Mr. Tremaine, the fact is, I need $50,000 from you right now.
What? What is this, Charlie?
Well, it's extortion money, Mr. Tremaine. You know what that is. It's just a word, like embezzlement.
Oh, I see.
Gerald, he knows. He actually...
That's right. I actually know, Mrs. Tremaine. I didn't know exactly before that it was embezzlement, you see. But Brother John told me he'd done time for your husband, and that was why he had this cushy job. I didn't know why he bothered to work at all. I know I wouldn't have.
No, I guess you wouldn't have.
Now, wait a minute. Well, I take that back. I know a reason why he worked here. Don't you, Mrs. Tremaine? Yeah. You were fooling around a little, weren't you? Huh? With Brother John?
Now, look, my wife and I have no secrets, so this is not a shock to either one of us.
But have you told the police? It might be a shock to them. Have you? Well, now, of course you haven't.
My wife didn't kill your brother, neither did I.
Maybe yes, maybe no.
How do we know you didn't kill him?
Why would I
kill my own brother.
For the money in the four savings banks?
I was going to get that anyway. Brother John told me so in the hospital. He even said he could put the touch on your wife for a little extra if I needed it.
You can't prove that.
Well, I think I could if I had to. There's a guy up at the hospital. He had the bed next to mine. He was there when John came to see me.
He knows all about this?
Well, he might. Neither one of us could talk at the time. Maybe he can't even now. I don't know. But he was still there when I got out.
What's his name?
Now, why would I tell you that?
I can find out.
Well, what's the difference, Mr. Tremaine? Suppose he says the whole story is true, that he heard John tell it to me. It'll all come out anyway, newspapers and everything. And then what will the police think about you? So, come on. I mean, let's be sensible. You raise the $50,000, and I'll clear out.
How am I supposed to raise $50,000?
What's the matter? Your house, your car. You must have insurance. You two stay there. I'll answer that phone.
What do you think, Constance?
Don't give it to him.
Well, it's just money.
Don't give it to him.
You sure?
It's wrong.
What I did was wrong. Let's not keep on doing what's wrong.
Well, it's a wrong number or something. It sounded like a singing telegram.
A singing telegram?
I couldn't make it out. Well, how about it?
Charlie, we don't think we can give you $50,000. We don't think we can afford it.
Can you afford being smeared all over the newspapers?
We can't afford to go on living this way, lying to each other.
One of you may not go on living at all.
Let me answer it this time.
Leave the phone off the hook.
Charlie, neither one of us killed John.
Tell that to the police.
I'm going to. I've talked to my wife and she agrees.
Gerald, come here. You too, Charlie.
Now look, I don't think you've thought this over.
Oh, yes, we have. We don't want to think about it anymore.
Gerald, listen.
Huh? What is it?
Listen. I'll hold the phone up. Listen, Charlie.
Frère Jacques, Frère Jacques, dormez-vous, Frère Jacques, dormez-vous.
Well, that's the story. It was the real Charlie on the phone, the guy in the other bed. See, he hadn't had a spontaneous recovery like mine. But he'd gotten back enough to get to a phone in the hospital, dial the number, and then sing this French song into the phone. Brother John, are you sleeping, are you sleeping? That's what it says. It's just my lousy luck. I never learned French, or I'd have known it was the real Charlie the first time he called. Oh, I guess you want the gun I killed John with, huh? Oh, here. Yeah, I've had it in my pocket the whole time. Oh, and thanks for offering me a lawyer. But frankly, I don't think any lawyer in the world could get me off. Do you? Well, do you?
Suspense. You have been listening to Brother John, starring William Redfield, and written especially for Suspense by Elspeth Eric. Suspense is produced and directed by Bruno Zerato Jr., music supervision by Ethel Huber, sound patterns by Joseph Cabibbo. Heard in tonight's story were Connie Lemke as Constance Tremaine, Paul McGrath as Gerald Tremaine, Sam Gray as John, Bill Smith as the Doctor, and Guy Repp as the voice of Charlie. Listen again next week when we return with The Curse of Temeshek, written by Jonathan Bundy, another tale well calculated to keep you in suspense. This is the CBS Radio Network.
And now, a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense. In a moment, Act One of The Curse of Kamoshek, starring Ian Martin as Turnbull, and written especially for Suspense by Jonathan Bundy.
Yes, yes, what is it, Walden?
I beg your pardon, Mr. Turnbull, but I thought you would like to know...
Yes, well?
Well, it's your nephew, sir, Mr. Donald Ransom.
Oh, Lord.
Yes, his car has just come into the driveway.
It has, huh?
Yes, sir.
Now, what the devil does that impractical young wastrel want this time?
Well, I'm sure I don't know, Mr. Turnbull.
Well, I think I do.
Yes, sir.
I think he wants some more extra money from his inheritance to squander on that nonsensical research and experimentation he's been doing over at the university, on those ridiculous journeys to heaven knows where in search of heaven knows what.
Yes, sir.
Money,
yes.
Money. Well, he won't have it.
No, sir.
Not as long as I have any legal right to the management of it. And then, after all, we do have to look out for ourselves, don't we? Of course we do. Well, don't we, Walden?
Yes, sir. Of course we do, sir.
Of course. So go out and meet him at the door. Tell him that I'm not in, that I've... Well, Donald! Come in.
Oh, here you are, Uncle Frederick. I thought I heard your voice in here. Hello, Walden.
Mr. Donald.
Well, I'm glad to see you, boy. You should come and visit with me more often. Sit down.
Thank you, sir.
That'll be all for now, Walden. If I need you, I'll ring.
Yes, sir. Thank you, sir.
Well, my boy, how are you?
Feeling better than I've felt in a long time.
Splendid. And you look it, too. But now what's on your mind?
I've come to say goodbye, sir.
You've come to... What was that?
I've come to say goodbye to you. I'm about to leave on another expedition.
You're what?
Yes, sir. In just a few days now, I'll be leaving for Egypt.
Egypt?
Yes, sir.
I see. Do you mind telling me why you think you ought to embark on another of these silly, expensive expeditions?
Uncle, I've spent months now in reading and research at the museum, at the university, working with Horace Bracton.
And who is Horace Bracton?
Oh, he's the son of Mr. J. Harrison Bracton, the curator at the museum. What's more, he's one of the foremost students of Egyptology in this part of the country.
Yes, I see. All right, very well, go on.
Uncle, I am now convinced that I can locate the tomb of the ancient pharaoh, Kamashek I.
Oh, you are, are you?
Yes, sir. I'd stake my life on it.
You mean, if I let you go...
What?
Donald, to put it bluntly, I'm fed up with your wasting your time on these stupid, pointless wanderings all over the face of the earth. And I mean completely pointless.
That's not exactly the way the museum feels about them, Uncle. Nor several universities.
Well, that's the way I feel about them.
I'm sorry.
What's more... You're wasting not only your time, but your money. Money that your poor father spent a whole lifetime struggling to accumulate. And not for any such nonsense as this. You can be quite sure of that.
Father left me that money to spend in any way I might see fit.
Oh, he did, huh?
He certainly did.
Provided, Donald. Provided. That your handling of it meets with my approval. Don't you forget that. When you're 30 and the estate passes completely into your hands, if you live that long...
Is that supposed to be a threat?
Take it any way you like. When you're 30, when the money is yours alone, very well, you can do anything you like with it. But until then, don't you forget for 1 minute that I am legally in control of it. All of it.
Well, You've opposed me and my plans for every one of my expeditions, haven't you?
I certainly have, and I shall continue to do so.
Do you mind telling me why?
For your own good, that's why.
Oh, I'm sure.
Don't be sarcastic, Donald.
Or is it your own good you're thinking of?
It is not. It's simply because sooner or later, boy, you've got to realize your responsibility. Realize that as the wealthy heir of a wealthy family, it's up to you to carry on a tradition that's been set for you. Whether you like it or not, to increase the fortune that has made your family name and reputation, to build even greater financial power. Not to waste it, throw it away.
Do you call my contributions to science a waste of money?
Science? Rot. What do you know about science? Now, look, Donald. Believe me, my boy, there's nothing selfish in my attitude in this matter.
Oh, no.
I am thinking only of you, Donald. Of your future. And above all, of the fine family name, the family honor. That you alone are left to uphold, that you must uphold. If for no other reason than respect for the memory of your father. Well, my boy.
Is that all, Uncle Frederick?
Well, it depends on you. Are you going to give up this asinine plan?
No.
What do you mean, no? Now, you listen to me.
Regardless of what you may say or think, I'm going to Egypt.
I said you listen to me, young man.
I made all my plans, obtained the sponsorship of the museum, thanks to Horace Bracton.
Donald, I'm...
So if this tirade is simply because you thought I might want more of my inheritance, Uncle Frederick. Well, you can stop worrying about it
and
right now.
And I tell you that you're not going on this stupid, this ridiculous expedition.
And I tell you that I am. There's nothing you can do or say that will stop me.
Oh, there isn't, huh?
No. Goodbye, Uncle Frederick.
Why, you insufferable young imbecile. Sit down and listen to me.
Sorry, I must go now.
Sorry, huh? Well, you will be sorry. What's the matter with you? Have you lost your senses?
I think I finally come to my senses.
Donald. Donald Ransom, have you forgotten that I am in a position to cut you off from your inheritance? Cut you off entirely? If I wish to.
I am fully aware of that, Uncle Frederick. But if you think I care, you're entirely wrong. Goodbye, sir.
Then, by heaven, I will cut you off. Well, you hear me?
I hear you.
So help me, Donald. I've tried to avoid this. Believe me, I have. I have shown more patience toward this arrogant behavior of yours than I thought I had. But your idiotic bullheadedness, your utter disregard for your responsibility, for the importance of your family name and social status, in spite of all I've tried to do, well, by heaven, I will have you cut off without one single solitary... Wait a minute. Wait a minute, I said! Where do you think you're going?
Egypt!
You'll be sorry, Donald. You don't know how sorry you'll be. Well, Walden, what's all that you have there?
A package and a letter, sir. It came for you by special post. By special delivery, as you call it.
Mm-hmm. Where?
From Egypt, sir.
Egypt? Well, well, well. I've been expecting a letter from him. 3 months now, isn't it, that he's been gone?
Yes, sir.
Yes, Walden, I knew very well that the money Donald had to beg for that stupid expedition would soon run out. So now he wants some more.
I'm sure I don't know, sir.
Well, I do, and Walden...
Yes, sir. Yes,
you
sir.
Can take that letter out and burn it.
But the handwriting on it, sir, it doesn't look
as
to me
for the
like...
the package. Well, all right, let me have it. We'll see what's in it.
Yes, sir, here you are, sir.
Probably some completely useless relic or souvenir that he picked up, sent along in the hope it might influence me into sending him money. Well, I assure you that it won't. I made my position clear when he walked out of here. And I don't intend to change it.
Mr. Turnbull, the handwriting on
this
letter...
Yes, I know, Walden. You've always been sympathetic towards some of his silly ideas, and perhaps even hoped that I would help him. Yes, sir. Now, don't worry, I won't. Let's see now.
But this was apparently written by somebody else other than...
Irresponsible young idiot! Look at this. Look at it, Walden.
Why, yes, sir, I see.
What is this, Donald's crude idea of a practical joke? This dirty old piece of some kind of dried up old bone?
It's from a human body, sir. And very, very old.
So this is the sort of nonsense Donald has been wasting his time and our money digging up out of the dirt and sand over there in Egypt. By heaven, I've said it before, and I say it again, Walden.
Yes, I know you have, sir. I know you have.
Now, don't you get out of line.
No, sir.
That letter, where's the letter?
Yes, sir. Here, sir. But as I started to say, sir, that handwriting is...
Mr. Turnbull. Oh, I see it's signed by Horace Bracton.
The young man he spoke of who went with him.
Hmm? Oh, yes, I remember. No. Walden. Listen to this.
Yes, sir.
Dear Mr. Turnbull, a few minutes before he died, your nephew, Donald Ransom...
Oh, dear. What a misfortune, sir.
Donald. Dead.
My deepest sympathy, sir.
Huh?
Yes, sir.
You can keep your sympathy to yourself, Walden.
I beg your
I don't
pardon,
quite.
Sir. I
just forget it and go answer the door.
Well, sir, but... yes, sir.
I knew it. I knew I was right. And now, by heaven, this proves it. Now, let's see. Your nephew Donald Ransom's last request was that I send you a section of the femoral bone from the skeleton of the pharaoh Kamashak that he recovered from the tomb near the ancient city of Giza. As you no doubt have been informed, he died of some as yet completely
sir.
Yes, what is it now?
Your pardon, sir.
Yes, Walden.
Mr. Harrison Bracton, the father of the young man who sent the letter.
Oh. All right, send him in.
Yes, sir. Right in here, sir.
Thank you.
Ah, come in, Mr. Bracton. Come in.
Thank you, Mr. Turnbull.
You may as well sit down, I suppose.
Thank you. And before we go any further, I must tell you how distressed I am about your nephew.
Yes, yes, sir. Now, let's see, you're over at the museum, aren't you?
Yes. I am the curator of osteology.
Osteology. That's the study of bones, I believe.
Yes.
Well, and here, take a look at this. Even in his last moments, my recalcitrant nephew chose to mock me by sending me this bone.
Oh, I know. From the remains of the pharaoh Kamashek, it's most exciting, isn't it?
Exciting.
I'll be honest with you. It's why I came in the hope I might be allowed to see it.
See it? Well, take it. It's yours for that stuffy museum you live in.
But you mean it?
Well, I certainly don't want it around here, do I?
Oh, I see. Then you believe it, too.
Hmm? Believe in what? What are you talking about?
The curse, Mr. Turnbull.
The curse?
Yes, that may have accounted for the strange death of your nephew, the curse of Kamashek.
Oh, you can't be serious, Bracton. You mean to sit here, you, a supposedly intelligent man, and... Oh, no, I don't believe it.
Have you forgotten what happened to the men who violated the tomb, who touched the remains of King Tutankhamun, knowing about the curse on them?
Why, that's absurd, ridiculous. You really believe in such rubbish?
I'm not sure.
Well, I am. It's utter nonsense, superstition. So here, take this worthless piece of bone along with you and get out of here.
No, I would hesitate to touch it, sir.
Oh, you would,
yes,
huh?
Yes.
Well, do you want it for that second-rate museum of yours?
My second... Well, of course.
All right, then, here. I'll bundle these papers around it for you. Here you are, now take it and leave.
Mr. Turnbull.
But to think that you, the curator of a museum, would fall for such trash is almost beyond belief. Go along.
Now, wait, sir,
I should have
please.
Recognized you for the superstitious, doddering old fool you are the moment you stepped in here.
Now, listen to
now,
me.
Now, get out. Get out of here before I lose my patience. Get along. Curse of Kamashag, huh? I'd like to see it try to act on me. Ridiculous.
Yes?
Mr. Turnbull, I must see him at once.
Oh, Mr. Bracton, I believe.
Yes, Harrison Bracton. I was here to see him only a few days ago. Take me into him. Where is he?
Well, I'm sorry, sir, but I doubt if Mr. Turnbull is in this evening.
He must be. He has to be. I must
now,
see him
sir,
immediately.
Please, wait. Please, sir.
Get
wait,
out of
sir.
The way. I'll find him
I
myself.
I tell you, he isn't into anyone this evening. Please wait, sir. Please.
What's going on around here? What's all the... Oh. You again.
Yes. It's I, Mr. Turnbull. I must talk to you.
Yes, so it would seem. Well?
I'm terribly sorry, sir. I tried
all right,
to stop
it's all
him.
Right, Walden.
Thank you, sir.
Well, what do you want this time, Mr. Bracton?
Here. Take it. Take back this accursed thing.
What?
I told you when you insisted I'd take it along with me. I told you there was a curse on it. The curse of Kamashek. Now it's proved itself.
Oh, Bracton, have you been to see a psychiatrist lately?
Oh, please, please don't jest about this, Mr. Turnbull. I told you I didn't want to actually touch this terrible thing, nor have I, nor will I. And now, after what I've seen it do to those who have touched it, I don't even want it near me.
Oh, well, that sounds very intriguing, Bracton. Go on.
Well, when I got it home, I placed it under a glass bell in one of the cabinets in my study. Very carefully, Mr. Turnbull, not actually touching it, not just using a pair of forceps.
Nonsense.
That night, sir, it somehow forced its way out of the cabinet. The glass was broken into 1,000 pieces, yet no one was around who could possibly have touched it.
Oh, no, ridiculous.
The next morning, the housemaid, knowing nothing about the curse on it, picked it up in her fingers and placed it on a table.
Well?
Late that night, frantically running away from what she described as a living mummy, she fell headlong down the stairs leading from her room on the third floor.
Now, Bracton,
she is still in the hospital, Mr. Turnbull.
And all because of this poor little bone. My.
Listen to me. You must listen to me.
Oh, I am listening.
The doctor who attended her. Oh, why did I? Why I did it, I shall never know.
Well, it was.
I let him take the bone with him to study it. In 2 days, Turnbull, that man, one of the finest in his profession, had to be committed to an institution as a raving maniac, babbling wildly about a phantom that pursued him. A phantom he described as looking like a mummy.
Oh, now, wait a minute, Bracton. I've heard enough of this. Do you mean to tell me that a man of your so-called intelligence, that you can possibly take a thing like this seriously? That you can really believe a chunk of bone could have caused these things you've told me about, if they really did occur?
It was you who inflicted this thing on us, Turnbull. And here, now you have it back.
Bracton, I'm
tired. I can only hope and pray that I may never see it again.
You honestly believe that?
I tell you, sir, those things are incontrovertible proof of the curse it carries.
And I tell you, sir, that you're nothing but a superstitious, doddering old fool. What's more, I'll prove it to you. Let me have the package.
Don't.
Here now.
Wait a minute. What are you going to do? Turnbull!
Well?
Surely you don't intend to touch that bone.
Why, I thought that's why you brought it here. So I could feel the curse of it, too.
Yes. Yes, I did, because I was angry and upset.
Very well, then.
But you mustn't.
Now, aren't you getting a little tired of being foolish about this thing?
Please, please, I beg of you.
There. Satisfied now?
Yes.
Now, watch me. I'll even hold it in both my hands.
Turnbull.
Rub it against my face.
Turnbull.
My cheek.
Heaven help you.
Curse, did you say? Why, Bracton, you're crazy.
Turnbull, you don't know what you're doing. You don't know.
You bet I do, Bracton. I'm simply proving once and for all that the only people who are affected by these silly, stupid, childish superstitions are those who believe in them, and I don't. Now that you've seen me defy this so-called curse, you don't have any reason to either. And this will be the proof of it. You will touch it now.
No.
Here you are.
No, please.
I said you'll touch it.
Don't take it away.
Touch it!
I beg of you.
Will you stand still, you blithering... Stand still! No!
Quite frankly, Mr. Bracton, I don't understand it. I don't understand this at all.
You don't understand what, Doctor?
I had Turnbull in my office for a complete examination not more than 10 days ago. At that time, and I'm sure of it, we overlooked nothing. His physical condition was perfect. But now... Well, there's only one way I can report this.
Yes, Doctor.
Death due to natural causes.
Natural causes?
Yes.
No.
No? Now, what do you mean by that, Mr. Bracton?
Nothing, I suppose. Nothing at all.
Suspense. You've been listening to The Curse of Kamoshek, starring Ian Martin as Turnbull, and written especially for Suspense by Jonathan Bundy. Suspense is produced and directed by Bruno Zerato Jr. Music supervision by Ethel Huber. Sound patterns by Joseph Cabibbo. Heard in tonight's story were Raymond Edward Johnson as Bracton, Mercer McLeod as Walden, John Thomas as Donald, and Guy Repp as the Doctor. Listen again next week when we return with Blackbeard's Ace, written by Jack Buttram. Another tale well calculated to keep you in suspense. The Woman's World Unfurled by Betty Furness, weekdays on the CBS Radio Network.
This has been a Cryptic County podcast. To check out our other storytelling podcasts like Let's Not Meet and Odd Trails, go to crypticcountypodcasts.com. We'll see you next time.
You know what ought to happen next? If this was a horror story...
That's what ought to happen next.
It did.